this machine is smart enough to withstand a little coffee being spilled on it and still hear it. With these built-in microphones, I found are superior to anything that you can get for under $300 that plugs in. It's astonishing, in fact. I did a test, and I was gonna spend several hundred dollars on a microphone, and I did an actual test just sitting in a room talking, you know, as you would in an interview, and this was the best of any alternative. I was really, you know.
And that's remarkable, because I haven't found anything with a built-in
microphone. Yeah. Well, maybe this is really, this machine is really made for sort of field recording, like this, with the smaller reels and so on. I have from Steve Lewis, who's, as I said, been doing the preparation, I have some specific questions here. Maybe the simplest thing, the grammar is a little hurried, and some of these, maybe I should just let you go through that. The last one is at the top, and then because he couldn't get it in at the bottom of the page. But that might be the most simple thing for you to comment on, each of the questions. And some of these questions may not follow, of course, depending on the answer to one before, but they're just... an attempt to get some idea about certain things before...
Well, I think that these are simple. This is Beaumont Newhall speaking. And I'm asked when and where did I first meet Brad. I first met Brad after the war, World War II, in 1945, when he was in New York City. In uniform, and making, and he had plenty of leisure time. His only job was to supervise the cleaning of motion picture film at the Signal Corps Center.
Didn't he have a commanding officer who just purposely gave him a lot of free time?
Well, I don't think they purposely gave him that, but he had a commanding officer who was the Look magazine photographer, Arthur Rothstein, former FSA photographer, that was very sympathetic to him.
Oh, what's that man's name? Do you know?
Arthur Rothstein.
No, his commanding officer? Oh, I didn't realize that.
First lieutenant.
Oh, well, that explains a lot.
And I don't know how old Brad was, 12, 45, that's what, 33? And he was very much involved in photography, spending all his spare time lugging his 8x10 camera around New York. He'd sewn for himself a bag that held two plate holders, and he'd carry the camera on its tripod in the subway, 8x10.
In uniform?
Yeah, and make four pictures a day. And it was there that he began to work with an 11x14-inch camera. Now, Brett, when I was not in New York City, my first wife, Nancy, was looking after the Museum of Modern Art, and she befriended Brett and helped him in every way. Indeed, he used the museum darkroom, and she introduced him to a forgotten photographer, Ira Martin, who was a pal of Clarence H. White. And he was the official photographer for the Frick Art Reference Library. And he was making copies of paintings in American collections using an 11x14-inch camera. And he lent Brett the camera, and Brett fell in love with it. It was his first 11 by 14 inch work. So that was a very important period. And I've been in question number two. I've been in contact with that. The extent has been whenever I'm in Carmel or he's in wherever I live. So I'd say that I met him actually every year. Always had a nice relation.
So it's been quite extensive, really. Just someone you've known and seen whenever possible. Or
I hadn't actually worked with him in particular until 1970. Perhaps it was the summer of 69. I went over his work selecting the work of the 1920s for the show I did at the Museum of Modern Art.
Just photo eye of the 20s?
Photo eye of the 20s. And I made a tape in which he talked about the early days. And then in 1974, in the summer of 74, Nancy and I spent 10 days selecting from his entire work 250 pictures.
So the Voyage of the Eye exhibit.
From which, was selected the exhibition at the University of New Mexico and the illustrations in the Voyage of the Eye book. I also made a tape at that time to help me write the preface. Question number three is what about having a father that's internationally known? It's fairly obvious that that has been the problem that Brad has faced. I think it's important to realize that relationship. It was a very close one. I don't think there was ever any conscious sense of rivalry about it. They worked together. Brad always said that his father was the best judge of his work, and Edward said the same thing about Brad. And as I have expressed in the article that appears in the Voyage of the Eye, called The Afterword, it was a mutual influence. And Edward, as one can tell from his daybooks, has acknowledged that a considerable amount of inspiration came from Brett, and vice versa. There is a later question that I'll talk about when we come to it, about the negative-positive space. I don't think it was anything like that at all. I don't think that either Edward or Brad had the slightest concept of negative space.
You mean as a name to give to a particular...
Yeah, absolutely no. They just call negative space where you put your negative. And neither of them had any such philosophical approach to photography as Adam Price.
In other words, they were working with it, but they wouldn't have called it that. They wouldn't have thought about it in those terms.
Not at all. Now, the next question is, I think I want to go on with that, that Brett was so close to his father that when his father was ailing and couldn't print, and some friends had raised some money to get prints from 1,000 of Edward's best negatives, Brett accepted the job, spent 1 year printing, 5 prints from, he finally worked out to 800 plus, and printed these to Edward's satisfaction. And Edward has said that sometimes the prints were better than he could have made. This was a very...
Edward remarked that at the time?
This was a dedication on the part of Brett. It was a backbreaking job. He was just barely a subsistence kind of income. But when Edward died, and the four sons met to discuss the disposition of the estate, Brett asked not to be a part of the executive, not to play a part of the executive's role.
In the printing and so on.
Because he wanted to get back to his own work.
Yeah, he had really put in quite
a whole year.
A lot of effort.
Now, the next question is, what other photographers have influenced Brett? I'd say nobody. Absolutely nobody. There's no interest in anybody else's work. Particularly Stieglitz. No use whatsoever for Albert Stieglitz. We got into a very highly emotional discussion about that.
With Stieglitz, you mean?
No, with Brett.
You and he?
Brett and I together. Yeah. Stieglitz, more fun thing, but Stieglitz didn't like his work. When he saw it in New York, and Nancy introduced him. And there's a certain ego in Brett, and he never got that. He doesn't keep abreast of what's going on.
He has no interest in being, knowing what's happening in photography. He just cares for his own work.
It's conceivable that he might have been influenced by Charles Schiller. He saw a great deal of Charles. He was reintroduced him to him. And, because Charles had such a tremendous regard for Edward, that he was very kind to Edward's son. So that's what I think. Well, question number five is partially answered by this. Certainly, in technique and aesthetic point of view, Brett and his father absolutely shared the same point of view during Edward's lifetime. As far as I know, Edward's technique was exactly that Brett used. During the war, he began to experiment going to the 8x10, from the 8x10 to the 11x14. And then, considerably later, have spotted exactly, in the 50s, he began to use a small camera and the enlarger, which is a complete breakaway from Edward's. This, I think, is more largely due to the fantastic improvement in technology.
Able to get the same results with lesser means, in a sense.
Brett found, and it proved it, that he can make a better image from a 2.25, 2.25 negative with a precision enlarger than he could with an 11x14 camera, with a consequently very long focal length lens.
And the limitations of the camera.
And limited, because he has made limitation to the field.
I saw an exhibit, in fact, Steve Lewis, who wrote these sketches, was with me at the time of Brett's work, which at first appeared to be 11x14 contact prints, but proved to have been, so to speak, 11x14 contacts made from 2.25 negatives. But once it was quite amazing.
And I think since Edward's death, it's been he's developed stylistically. There are many changes. He's much bolder in his composition. He is much more abstract. He's much less concerned with the recognition of the subject matter. I think one of the surprising things is the loss of sense of scale. You don't know what size the original is. Mm-hmm. You can see something 3 inches high and literally a glacier 5 miles high and think that they're the same. sort of winter icy things. And I think there's a very stronger use of extreme contrasts of black and white. I think it's utterly different. Now, the White Sands period, 1945-46, he was still working with the Edward tradition.
Tonality of that is much more...
Tonality and all, but his recent Alaskan work is utterly different. Well, that gives you something to go on number five.
Sure.
Number six, what is Brett's strongest and weakest point? Well, I'd say the strongest point is his complete dedication to it. The mastery of technique is superb technique. I don't know if I can really talk about weak points. Perhaps is doesn't have quite as broad a vision as one might kind of expect on other things. But I don't really think I can comment on that. About the articles. I don't think there's anything of introducing positive and negative space relations to Edward. I don't think Edward ever thought in those terms. The negative-positive space relations are obvious in Brett's work in very early years, when he was a teenager in Mexico in 1925. The tin roof comes to mind at once. I don't find that in any of Edward's work to the extent that it is in Brett's. It's a common denominator that goes through his work. And I think you perhaps we could find it in Edward, but we certainly wouldn't find it so consistent.
Well, it may be belaboring it to go into great detail on it, because it's one thing that can be named, kind of, but there are many other elements too, so that's probably all we need to say.
Now, Edward admits that Brett introduced him to Point Lobos, to the rocks. Now, that's a different thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Number eight is absolutely correct. Brett is extremely reticent to discuss his own work and talk about it at all. Is nonverbal, is not interested, is not interested in talking about it. It takes friendship and patience to get him to talk into a microphone. He talks beautifully into the microphone, but to get him circled down onto his own work is rather difficult. And he will also often say to me, "Oh, Bob, about those things, you're the art historian and I'm not."
And, end of discussion.
He just doesn't have any interest in that.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm familiar with Brett's sculpting, and it relates very closely indeed to his photographing. And I'm surprised that the questioner has not read my article in which I make a very keen point about that.
Which, in the Voyage of the Eye.
I mean, in the Voyage of the Eye.
Well, I think that's where the question... This may be a set of questions that Steve is asking a number of people. Well, then,
Because the inspiration from his sculptures is taken right out of his photographs. And this is not merely an art historian's assumption, it's Brett himself that says so. And that's the way he works.
From the photographs to the sculpture.
From the photograph to the sculpture, he's inspired by forms that he finds in the sculpture. And he doesn't necessarily copy it, but he gets going from that point of view. And he makes three-dimensional what is flat in the photograph. That's another very important point. And it's important to note that he works entirely, almost entirely, on plywood. And plywood gives a delineation of the profile, contour lines as it is, where the plies of the wood come together. And this is a kind of extension of the photographic side, because those so-called negative images are almost just sheer black with no depth to
it. And that contour and
still. I think that Brad has a strong influences from music. We've talked about art. He's very fond of the sculpture of Brancusi. We saw a lot of Brancusi sculpture in the Ahrensburg collection when that was in Los Angeles. His father was a close friend. He is well read. I don't think that's been a particular influence on his work, but I'm very fond of Baroque music. And, yeah, Brad was invited to show with the original F-64 group, but and I think maybe he was elected a member later. But I don't think he had very much involvement with this group. I think it's a good question to ask him. I think we tend to overemphasize the importance of that group in a very short life.
Relatively informal compared to the...
And its chief function was to, very local, to combat the possibly pretentious and absurd arguments of William Mortensen in photography. And, I think that was relatively unimportant. Teaching has played a part in Brett's career in a very minor way. He has given workshops and he's participated in many workshops. But he teaches by demonstration and example rather than any formal way.
Yeah, if he's reticent to talk about his own work, I can't see him doing what we would call a critique.
No. Somehow I don't quite... I don't want to say that he's not a good teacher, because he's very inspiring to young people. It's a very positive thing and a very good thing. But it's far from teaching in the accepted sense of the word.
Teaching sort of by the example of his commitment, really, more than anything else. That's what I'm sensing from your remarks.
Neil Armitage was the closest of the people you name in question 13 to Brett and Edward. Neil Armitage was very close to Edward, and Brett practically grew up with Neil as a member of the family, a kind of good uncle. And Neil pulled him through, pulled Edward through some of the difficult problems when Brett was ill and so forth. And so he had a real, I guess we could say, an uncle-nephew relationship.
Let me... sometimes helps a little. I think it doesn't like the altitude, but as long as it's not very loud, it's no problem.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's continue.
Mel was very kind to him, and Mel, of course, did his first book. Mel arranged for his first exhibition in a commercial gallery at the Jack Zeitlin, gallery. And I did his book, and then he brought out a second volume, I don't believe so. At any rate, Bill Armitage is a constant close friend and publisher and promoter of Brass Band. David McAlpin is the private collector who is very generous with so many contemporary photographers. His way of sharing his wealth was to give what amounted to a grant to photographers in whom he believed, asking nothing in return, but usually receiving a very generous crop of the year's work. And Dave entertained Brett in the East. Brett spent time at Dave's Princeton, New Jersey home. About Bernie Freemesser and Jerry Robinson, I can't speak. I know that Bernie is a very good friend, and another friend that you should talk to when you get to that is an attorney.
Not Don Ross.
No, Don Ross, yes, but his attorney.
Oh, Brett's personal attorney?
Yeah, well, it happened to be the other way around. Brett's close photographic friend, who is an attorney. And his name will come to me in a minute. Bob Byers, Robert Byers, B-Y-E-R-S. He's a very good photographer in a purely amateur way. He and Brett and Don Ross have gone off on many trips together. The next question, incidentally, I think that the mention should be made here somewhere.
Sure.
Of the voyaging Brett. And a part of his whole life is to get away and travel.
Yeah, he's done a tremendous
amount. And it may be paradoxical that many of the photographs he takes in places far distant from home, he could have made out of his back door.
Yeah.
But that isn't the point. The point is that this is necessary for him to do, and I guess freshens his vision and gives him a change.
A stimulus of some kind, even.
Stimulus of some kind. He likes to spend 6 months traveling a year. That's a lot.
Yeah, that really is.
And Brett shared a studio with Edward Weston. I don't know whether he was involved in commercial photography of some sort, but he never has been a commercial photographer. He's done a few jobs on assignment. I know that some of these jobs, he did one for the City Service Oil Company.
Yeah, no, that work is at the Eastman House.
Yeah. Didn't please
the
client and never was used.
Wasn't their image of themselves, huh?
Although it was paid for.
Was it intended to be used as some kind of promotional photograph?
Well, they were building up an archive of their activities, patterned after strikers, an archive of Standard Oil.
Yeah, Brett was not the person to use for that kind of an effort, I would think.
Brett did no good on assignments. We, in return for use of the darkroom at the Museum of Modern Art, he was asked to photograph Paul Strand's exhibition, and he just never can get around to doing it. And he just is not a businessman. How has he supported himself? He supported himself by the sale of prints, by living extremely economically, and by taking jobs when the money couldn't get anywhere else, as a carpenter or something like that.
Is that principally what it would have been, carpentry or?
No, he's very skillful in carpentry. He could build a house. I don't know that anybody that we could call a quote patron, close quote. He certainly got a great deal of support from David McAlpin, Recently, he's made some very large sales, but of course the whole picture has changed in the last 5 years. Now he's comfortable just from the sale of his own prints, which is the way it should be. I don't think that Brett is sensitive about his 4 marriages and talk about it. I married one of his ex-wives, and she's not sensitive about it.
Yeah, you're in a good position to answer this question.
She just simply said it wasn't a marriage, so we decided to not just to live with one another. Simple as that. She never talks about it either. With any kind of bitterness or disappointment,
just sort of very easygoing on the subject, really, I guess. Kind of, or maybe that's not the right word, but...
I just think that Brad is not the type of person that settles down with a wife.
He's going to travel 6 months a year, that...
No kind of way.
Yeah.
And, more than a bit chauvinistic, perhaps, no.
Yeah, heard some stories.
He called his truck Macho. The number plate on his truck is Macho.
Heard some stories.
He called his truck Macho. The number plate on his truck is Macho. I can't speak whether he's had any great disappointments. I'm sure he has. I don't know. He doesn't speak about it to me. He's very equanimous. He moves along in a very, in all my relationships, he's been very even-tempered, very thoughtful. He's a very thoughtful person. He has the manners of the 19th century, very gracious. He entertains in the one room. He makes a local wine, and one of his dishes, a real occasion. Very hospitable. And as far as other people to contact...
Yeah, you mentioned one.
I mentioned Bob Byers. And,
Now, I should mention here...
Yeah,
that Steve is going... I have spoken with Doty. Has spoken or is speaking sometime maybe this week. I'm not certain, actually, with Don Ross. And plans to speak with Ansel. And so... Those were the people that came to his mind.
Not a person, a good person would be, Rosie Mazzeo, M-A-Z-Z-E-O. Rosie is a quite good photographer and a brilliant musician.
Is he a resident of Carmel?
He's a resident of Carmel. He was the manager of the personnel manager of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. He plays the flute and something else.
Someone who Armitage would have known also, most likely,
in the
music world?
I don't know necessarily. Rosie is now retired, and he's been on several trips with Brad. He was on the trip to Baja California, which was quite a trip.
Yeah, that's
great admirer, studied with Brad. And I think Rosie would be well worth talking to. He traveled so much, I don't know when you bring him around.
But try and begin to track him.
He's a good friend of Brad. And about all I can think of.
Yeah, I guess the only, sort of general question underlying all this really is, are there any things to be explored with Brett that might not be obvious or be, that aren't really, that we haven't implied or that isn't in the articles or chronologies, and I suppose there isn't too much of that, but...
Well, there isn't a great story to tell.
I have a question here, and this is really, I haven't been able to see some of the recent couple portfolios in the last few years. I've seen more of the earlier work, but the person I was talking to made a charge when I talked about going to see Brett, that he didn't feel that his work sort of exhibited any growth, that he had a kind of a strength of vision that persisted, but...
Disagree with that.
You would disagree?
I think if the book had been, Voyage of the Eye, had been done the way Nancy and I planned, and it was chronological, that you would see a definite change, a definite growth, a definite strength, and an increase in abstraction, and much more sophisticated. and Wes Edwards.
Yeah.
I really feel very strongly about that. I think it's difficult to get a hold of it because very little of his present day work has been published. I'm not sure that he's always chosen his best work or his portfolio. But I really think that his work is developed. Now, for instance, in 1974 or 75, he made a series of nudes. He'd never made nudes before.
Yeah, that seems to be the one area that Edward did that he never, or at least seldom investigated.
Not his nudes, they're utterly different from that. Utterly different.
But it hasn't been published, by and large.
I haven't seen it once published. I'm not sure it's in the book. I hope that it would have been after the 50 years.
Yeah.
After the deadline of the book.
Yeah. Well, very good. Let me put this machine out of its misery here. It's